Well, Paul sends me this email. Clippers, George. Funny you brought that up. I cut off the tip of my finger to the first knuckle just behind the fingernail while I was doing some woodworking with a wood joiner. Well, I went to the hospital. There was nothing to be sewn back on. I told the doctor, it'll be okay. It'll grow back. And it did. When I went back to see him, he was stunned to see that it had indeed grown back. Peace and love. That's an incredible story. Chop off your finger and it grows back. We should be able to do that, though, with our body parts. We'll be back with more Open Lines on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, back with you. Open line time. Let us go right back to the phones. El Segundo, California. We go west and we go to Alex. Hey, Alex, you're on Coast to Coast.
Hey, George. How's it going?
Okay, not bad.
I'm a longtime listener. My wife and I listen to you every night.
Thank you. Thank her, too.
So my question to you is, what's your take on the rumbling noises being heard around the world?
Good question. I think of the few that might be real, that it has something to do with the plates shifting on this planet. I think we could be in for a huge earthquake someplace on this planet. And I think the planet makes these sounds when something's happening down there.
You think it's from the inner core?
Yeah, deep down.
Well, one more question before I let you go.
Sure.
The Webbot, what's your take on it?
I think they're very good at what they do. They pick up on the web chatter and they make some pretty darn good predictions. Now, the other thing is, if you want to be supernatural about that sound, it's something coming from above. They're beaming something down to us for some reason. That's always a possibility, too. Let's go to Alan in Columbus, Ohio. Welcome to the program. Good morning, Alan.
Hey, George, how's it going?
Okay.
Hey, your fingernail clipper story. I actually clipped my little finger on my left hand.
How deep?
It was pretty deep. But it got infected. And when it got infected, the infection ran all the way up my left arm. And I wound up spending like 4 days in the hospital.
Oh, my God. Did your arm swell up, too?
Oh, yeah. All the way up to my elbow.
Wow.
But I was in the hospital for like 4 days with 103 degree fever on intravenous antibiotics. Well, they finally pulled my fingernail off, what was left of it. They actually numbed it and pulled it off.
Ugh.
So it would open it up to drain all that out. And it took about a year for that to heal up. So you can cut yourself with fingernail clippers.
And in terms of healing, does a new fingernail grow back or not?
Oh, yeah. It actually comes back in like three stages. The first one's just like really, really thin.
Maybe like a little layer? Okay.
Yeah, maybe like toilet paper thin.
All right.
And then the second one's a little thicker, and it starts growing back from the cuticle. A little heavier.
So, and it just, you could see it growing out, but it's really slow, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, and it hurt. Oh, it hurt. But I had another question for you, too.
Sure.
I've got, this is a weird one. I've got this thing I call a vulture that hangs around me. It's not really there, but I see it there.
It's like a cloud over you?
Well, yeah. And I went on, I'm an insider. So I've got all these programs that I listen to, and I've listened to John Zaffis, and I've went on his site, and Ben Eno.
Yep, Ben and Paul. Yep.
Uh-huh. I went on their site and looked at that, and even Lionel Fanthorpe, which you mentioned earlier, I went on there and then checked some of his stuff out. Everything that I can check seems like I've got this. I don't know if you call it a demon or a evil spirit or something that just kind of like hangs around me. it's weird. Every time something goes wrong, I see this thing, and it's just a black, like a black, not really a shadow man kind of thing, but it's just a black image. And it's about the size of a large dog, but, you know, standing up.
How long has this thing been following you?
Well, that goes back to the tarot cards and the Ouija board thing. when I was young and dumb and being stupid, I got into some of that stuff. And after that, it seems like this thing just follows me around all the time. Not all the time, but, you know, anytime something bad is going to happen to me, like if I lose my job or I get hurt or, you know, one of my kids gets sick, something like that, the car breaks down, it laughs at me when that happens.
I wonder if it creates these things or it's just warning you about these things.
Well, that was what I was going to ask you, because everything I've looked at online, it doesn't really specifically say that. Like with John Zaffis, it says maybe there's an object in the house.
Mm-hmm.
But I've gotten rid of everything, you know, that related to anything I had anything to do with, and this has been over 25 years ago.
Could you say without a shadow of a doubt that whenever you see it, something bad hits you?
Oh, yeah, I can bet on it. I can put money on it.
And generally over how many days? One day, 2 days?
It's usually like within a 3-day, 72-hour period. It's never longer than that.
So it goes away during times, good times.
Yeah, you could say that. It never really goes away. It kind of fades away. Sometimes it will maybe be as big as a baseball. And then other times it's as big as like a dog standing up, you know, on its hind legs.
I would take the positive approach with this. And to me, Alan, it's a warning sign for you. Maybe it's telling you, all right, be careful. Something's going to happen. Be ready.
Who would you recommend, like your guests, who would be more familiar with this type of thing? Since I've done the research, I can't seem to find anything.
I like Marianne Winkowski.
Oh, the ghost talker.
The ghost hunter, yep.
Okay. I appreciate it.
Track her down.
All right, George. Thank
you.
Okay,
my friend. Be well.
Bye-bye.
Let's go next to Bloomfield, Indiana. It's Randy's turn. Randy, thanks for holding.
Hello, George.
Hey.
How are you?
All righty.
Hey, great. George, I listen to you all the time, man. I'm a first-time caller.
Thank you. What took you so long to call?
Well, actually, you've never really brought up a topic that I was ready for until now.
All right. Well, here we go.
Okay. I was getting off of work, and I went out to warm up the truck and scrape the ice off the windshield there, and you were talking about a study that was conducted in Canada recently.
Mm-hmm.
Something about the association of people who smoke marijuana and then operate a motor vehicle.
Yeah, and they claim that if they smoke a couple hours before they drive, they'll be more impaired than someone who doesn't, I guess.
Okay, well, my question is, what was this study based on? Was it police accident reports or anything compared to a comparison in alcohol-related?
I think it was based on police reports and known people who had smoked cannabis.
Oh, so there was a certain community targeted under this study?
Yes.
Oh, well, so there was a red flag little community in Canada.
Wherever. Now, I don't know where they did it.
Oh, okay. Well, I was just curious.
But it was a Canadian study, so it must have been in Canada.
Well, as this was compared to collisions that are either involving alcohol or medical condition, what are the numbers?
Well, what they did is they also threw alcohol into the mix. In the little part of the survey I got, they didn't break those down. I would guess myself that alcohol-related driving accidents would be larger than marijuana-related accidents.
They are, sir. George, they are.
Yeah.
I'm going to tell you, this is the reason why. You finally, you got me to call you, man. I just had to say, you know, I've been a street medic, worked on the ambulance for many years. I don't do that any longer. I left, didn't want to see that kind of thing anymore, but almost every time it was alcohol related.
Yeah.
And I can't even really tell you any time it was due to someone who had smoked a joint. Or they got behind the wheel.
And you must have seen some unbelievable things, Randy. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, I've seen people wrapped around entire trees and utility poles, vehicles beyond recognition. This is alcohol.
Yeah.
This is not about cannabis.
What is it about alcohol that makes people want to drive 120 miles an hour instead of 60?
Well, it's simply flawed judgment. You know, you don't have a sense of reality. You're invincible. You're 10 foot tall and bulletproof when you're drinking. And people get out there and they can beat the freight train at the crossing. You know, it's really a scary thing, but I've never seen anyone involved in something that serious because of marijuana.
Yeah.
In most cases, marijuana seems to make most people paranoid behind the wheel. In fact, they are eating the upholstery, and, you know, they're just going like 40 mile an hour and playing the drums on the upholstery.
Yeah.
Like, come on, guy, get out of my way.
I get you. Okay, well, thanks for calling, Randy. Appreciate that. And one of the things, you know, we're opening up the brand new Coast merchandise store. And what we're going to do is key in on certain products every month, in addition to everything that you're going to find in the store. And I was talking to Tom just a few weeks ago, and I said, you know what? They now make little breathalyzers, and we should sell them. And the first thing Tom said to me was, no, we're not going to endorse drinking and driving. And I said, no, that's not the reason we want to do this. And, you know, we want people to be able to breathe, you know, puff and breathe into a little breathalyzer and not drive, period. I want them to be able to see this 0.08 and say, I'm not going to drive. Now, does that mean if it's 0.06 that they should get in and drive? Probably not, but at least they have a basis for going back in and having some coffee or something. But we're going to do things like that in the Coast store. And so be it. Let's go west of the Rockies, Julie in Garden Grove, California. Welcome to the program. Hi, Julie.
Hi, George. What a great job you're doing.
Well, thank you.
I was Ramona's mother. Ramona Bell.
Arts Ramona?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
And I started listening to you, and I was kind of skeptical at first, but oh my God, you are doing a great, great job.
Well, I'm having fun. It's a great show, and Art, as you know, Julie, gave me a huge audience to start with. And
oh my God!
And of course, our condolences on the passing of Ramona. That was tragic when that happened. Oh, my God.
It was very tragic for me.
Oh, my God.
But, you know, it's been 5 years now. Can you believe it's been 5 years?
It goes by too fast.
I know. But congratulations on all your stations.
All right. Well, thank you very much, too, Julie. I appreciate that. Let's go to Reno, Nevada. Charles with us on our Skype line. Hey, Charles. Welcome to the show.
Good evening, Mr. Norrie. Just had a quick question. What have you seen the Thrive video with Foster Gamble? Features Catherine Austin Fitz and Stephen Greer.
Yes, yes.
What's your take on it?
Well, look, Catherine Austin Fitz, one of the best ever. We have her on as often as possible. Stephen Greer, very good. Devoted, loves what he's doing, pushing for disclosure. Pushing for alternative energy. You know, they're all great people in their own fields. I mean, they are the best at what they do. I endorse all of them.
Cool. Thank you.
Okay. All right. We still have more calls, and we're going to them. First-time caller, Doug in Richland, Washington. Hey, Doug, what's up?
Hey, good morning, George.
Hi.
I'm a first-time caller, long-time listener. While I was on hold, I was trying to figure out how long I've been listening or how long I've been hooked on Coast to Coast, and it's got to be well over 25 years.
Oh, my gosh.
In fact, in the old days, I got so hooked, I realized it was ruining my sleep at night, and I actually bought two of those Real Talk recorders.
Mm-hmm.
Sea Crane.
Versacorders?
Pardon me?
The Versacorders?
No, they were called Real Talk.
Real Talk. Well, that's way before my time.
Yeah, well, they used a cassette tape, and they brought the speed down on them to 1/4 of normal so they could get 3 hours on one side of a 90-minute tape. And I actually had to buy two of them so I could get the whole 4 or 5 hours of whatever show Art was running.
Technology at its best.
Anyway, I don't want to waste a whole bunch of time or feel like I'm blowing a bunch of smoke, you know, where, and complimenting you, but you guys really are doing a fantastic job. I've tried many times to call you. I never thought I would be calling you on possibly such a seemingly innocuous subject as fingernails and the like. But you struck a nerve with me tonight in that I never had a biting a finger, chewing a fingernail problem, but I did have, I used to grab hold of hangnails with my teeth and pull them out.
Ouch.
And I did that late one afternoon, and that evening, that finger was swollen up, and I didn't think a heck of a lot about it. I went to bed, got up the next morning, the finger is at least double its size, and it's it's starting to go up my hand and turn red and stuff.
Oh, my, yeah, infected.
By the time I got to work, it looked like I had an entire new circulation system racing up my arm. And I said to an employee of mine, I says, oh, what would you do with this? And he says, I said, would you take this to a doctor? He says, get the hell out of here. And excuse me. And so my doctor, who was a personal friend of mine, he was only a few blocks away, and I raced over there, and he took one look at it and immediately injected it with a bunch of antibiotics. And it scared him so bad he actually x-rayed it because he thought it had gotten to the bone, but it hadn't.
Could you have lost your arm?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Well, actually, if it had gone
that's scary.
A lot further, I could have killed
the
me.
The infection could have gone right to your heart.
Yep. You know, we've always heard that our human mouths are dirtier than dogs' mouths. And
look, when you go to get your teeth cleaned, a dentist will tell you that the bacteria in your mouth is unbelievable.
Yep.
And if in the old days, if you had like a valve problem in your heart or a heart murmur or something, you'd have to take an antibiotic pill before and after just to save you. Bobby Darin died that way.
Wow.
The old singer.
Wow.
One of the classics. Okay, we're going to take this. We've got a couple minutes, maybe one more call or so, but talking about stuff. Why is it that you can be so tough about certain things? I have a huge high pain threshold, but you stub your baby toe and it pulls you down to nothing. I mean nothing. Nothing hurts worse than that, let me tell you. No matter where you are, how tough you may be, you stub your baby toe and you are up a creek to be sure. I don't know if we have time for another call or not, so I shall continue telling you what's going to be in store next week until we get to the top of the hour break. Stephen Schwartz joins me on Monday as we talk about his work in consciousness and meditation. On Tuesday, Catherine Lanigan joins us. We talk about her extraordinary work about angel tales. How about that? Joe Bullard back again, talking a little bit about Coral Castle in Florida. And Ed Leeds Skolnin, Chuck Harder, old-time radio host from years gone back, talks about how he was one of the first to break the Area 51 story. And then we're back to Friday already with more open lines. And don't forget, of course, John B. Wells on Saturday, Ian Punnett on Sunday for you on Coast to Coast AM. And when I come back in just a moment, a little surprise, sort of behind the secret door. I'll tell you about that next. Sure is, and we're going to ride through this roller coaster of life together for a long, long time, to be sure. And by the way, wherever you may be, just protect yourself, be careful, and always wake up and enjoy the day, because you just never, never know. I'll be back in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Don't touch your dial. Well, every once in a while, my producers try to stump me with guests behind the secret door. Most of the time, I figure out who they are, but sometimes it's kind of tough. Let's go behind the secret door. Hello there.
Oh, gosh, oh, my. Oh, am I on the air? Tommy, am I on the air? Oh, Georgie?
Oh, my God.
I'm on the air with Georgie. I'm so nervous. How are you?
I will not get this.
Oh, sure you will.
I'm going to work at this.
Oh, sweetheart, you will.
Are you a guy or a woman?
Oh, gosh. You didn't say that night.
Oh, God.
Well, I guess I'm going to have to refresh your memory. Remember the little party we went to? That this big, big, giant place up in the hills. Beautiful state. And then you wandered off by yourself and I followed you?
Are you Ed Grimsley?
Oh, who?
Roger Lear.
Very good.
Oh, my God, Roger, you're good. Oh, my God.
I didn't think you would do it, but you did. Before I got to my grass shtick.
Oh, yeah. That's a great joke, which I'll have to tell the audience one day. Not tonight. How are you?
Okay. How are you, George?
Good. I understand you're going to be revealing some incredible information up at the X conference in another couple weeks.
Yes, I sure am. And we'll be holding a press conference, too, on the Monday following. So I have some just absolute fantastic, unbelievable information that has to do with the last implant surgery. And we can get into just a touch on a few things tonight.
Yeah, absolutely. What's new with you these days, Roger, beyond that?
Well, I'm just so unbelievably busy with all this stuff and trying to get all the ducks in the row. We can't get up there, do a press conference, and then have us sound like a fool. Bringing back a wonderful scientist back with me at the press conference to have him talk about some of the scientific details of the metallurgy. And we're going to have some other guests there, too. I'll make a full presentation at the conference, but at the press conference, we're just going to hit on those things which should set quite a record for those that want to be serious about this subject, and it is a very serious subject.
Absolutely. You know, Stephen Bassett believes we're going to get disclosure soon. I hope he's right, Roger. I'm not sure. I still think it's going to come from some whistleblower.
Well, we've talked about this before, and I've been telling audiences now for over a year. I hope Steve is right, just as you said. But disclosure, in my opinion, is happening as we sit here and talk. It's happening all over the world. It's happening now. It's seeping from the depths right up to the surface. And all you have to do is be astute and look at what's going on. Last Sunday's Times, in the magazine section, there was a big show article on Area 51. Kind of a ridiculous article talking about aircraft that's 50 years old. But it's the talk about Area 51. You can't talk about something that doesn't exist. It's there. We have increases in sightings all over the world. We have just a phenomenal amount of stuff going on right now. So whether the consciousness is responsible or something or someone else is responsible, disclosure is happening.
Well, absolutely. And those of you who are new to the program, Dr. Roger Lear is the foremost authority on removing and having removed alien implants, or implants, I should say, Roger, because we're still not quite sure where they're coming from, are we?
Well, after the press conference and what I'm going to reveal, I don't think there's going to be much doubt about the vernacular. We're going to have to call these at least non-terrestrial implants.
That's exciting. It really is. Weren't you on UFO Hunters recently?
I'm on from time to time. I don't know anymore because I've
you're
done
coming
so many,
and going. You're all over the place.
Yeah, I've done so many television shows that people are constantly telling me that I'm on. I got a call the other day, and a friend of mine was chastising me because he saw me in the movie Race to Witch Mountain. So he said, "Oh, you didn't tell me you were in that film."
Roger, what keeps driving you?
I guess the quest for knowledge and to try and shed some light on a mystery, which is probably the one most important thing that involves mankind on this planet.
Let's go back to the beginning. How did you get involved in this? How did your first cases come to you?
Well, I started the surgeries as an absolute consummate skeptic. I thought I was going to have a little fun. This guy showed me an x-ray with a metallic object in it, which to me looked like a leftover from a foot surgery, and he insisted this was an alien implant, and I laughed and laughed and laughed. And so I agreed to do a surgery free of charge, and we wound up doing actually two of them. And right from the beginning, there was some very strange things. But I did this as a skeptic, as a joke, to donate a little bit of time to have some fun. And, you know, then the years went by.
Little did you know.
Little did I know. And, you know, here I'm 180 degrees and 42 countries in 7 years and talking with you on the radio, about 2,500 hours of radio time. I don't know how much television time, major motion pictures. I didn't ask for any of this.
Did you know anybody in the UFO community at the time when you were getting into this?
Absolutely not. You know, I knew my cousin, Ken Ring, who had written a book. And it was he was a PhD psychologist at the University of Connecticut, Ken Ring. And he was into near-death experiences. And he wrote a book called The Omega Project, which involved UFOs and near-death experience. But that he was the only person I knew.
Well, we're going to have some time in Washington to sit down and have some dinner, Roger. And as you know, every time I'm at these conferences, I'm running around like a chicken with my head cut off. But I'm going to be up there for 2 days this time, so we'll have some time to get together.
Oh, I look forward to that. And as you know, I can't walk across the floor without getting mobbed. So the same thing goes for me. If I can get a little quiet time, we can have a real nice chat.
Roger, The Hollywood is fascinates me because we've always thought that they were leaking information to kind of desensitize us. What do you think about that?
Oh, I agree. I think that Hollywood or somebody in Hollywood really is in the know because I'm a lot older than you, George, and you know I can remember World War II and all the films that they show. Each one of those films had a purpose. It seems like many, many times in Hollywood, than more than not, there is a message being given out to the public. Now, if you're sharp enough to get it, you get it. And, of course, you know, Jordan Maxwell's description of Hollywood and you know, ancient magic and the wizard, and he talks about, you know, the wand that the magicians held and what it was made out of. It was made out of the wood of a holly tree. So we really do have, you know, Hollywood here, which is magic, but it's still an information campaign that's controlled by somebody. And look at the people involved. I mean, it's impossible to believe that Spielberg has, you know, no knowledge of the truth. It's just impossible to believe.
You know, Roger, the work that you put in, you to me, you're like the John Max. You're people who have devoted your career now to this. You're not wealthy off of this. But you care enough to try to get the answers to this, and you just don't give up. One day, when they write your epitaph, what would you like them to say?
just something very basic. I was a little guy who got very, very interested in the subject and maybe gave some information to the world on one of the most important subjects in the history of humankind.
And hopefully they say this at conferences.
Well, I don't know who's going to say what or even if anybody's going to know or whether I'll care or not, since I don't know what happens in the afterlife. But I've had a couple of near-death experiences, and certainly the going there, as far as I'm concerned, is a wonderful experience. Not that I'm telling anybody to volitionally go there, but as I said, I had two near-death experiences and was far from being unpleasant. and I did not want to come back, George. Did not want to come back.
Dr. Roger Lear is our special guest as he comes through the secret door. And, Roger, I got to tell you, I mean, it took me a while to get that voice down. Are you an actor, too?
Tom wanted to know what I was going to do, and I absolutely wouldn't tell him.
So, he was baffled. As a matter of fact, he just sent me an IM message, and he said, George, how'd you guess? I didn't know who it was. I would not have guessed who it was.
Well, I was just sorry that you guessed before I was going to go out onto the lawn with you and have you bring me back a plate full of fresh-cut grass.
That goes down in history of one of the funniest, greatest stories I've ever told.
It certainly will.
Did that at the Roger. And to those, I think it's on YouTube now, but about at least a good year ago, I was invited to speak at your roast. You were getting an award for your exemplary service to the field of ufology, and this was arranged with producer Tom, where I was on the podium doing my part, introducing a Lear in for this this event, and I decided, just to be funny, because John Lear was there, to pretend that I had flipped out and didn't know who the award was for. And so I was introducing John Lear as the recipient. And you could hear the crowd, Roger, go, oh, my God. He doesn't know.
I remember.
And then I had Tom on cue come up to me and whisper while I was at the podium, you know, it's Roger Lear. And then I immediately went into and Dr. Roger Lear, and it was just, I had a great time doing that. That was funny.
Well, I guess we could say that all in all, although both of us have a lot to do with conferences, there is a little time for levity, and we certainly can enjoy. Going to those conferences is sort of like coming home to me. I see people, you know, that I haven't seen in years, and lots of friends.
I had a great time at the one I went to up in Northern California, where Ed Grimsley finally tackled me and brought me up on the roof, and I saw those two UFOs, or whatever they are.
Yeah, whatever they are. There's something there, anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, he
absolutely.
Just called me the other day, and I thought he was going to talk to me about what he sees, you know, through his night vision stuff. But he told me that he had a car, an old car, and it turns out to be a 1948 Dodge, which is the same year as the one I've been restoring for the last 20 years.
That's great. These. Oh, but you converted one of your cars with this water to gas, too, didn't you?
Oh, yes, I certainly did, and I'm still working on it. It's an unfinished process.
We got mixed results on our first test. You did, too, right?
Yeah, I sure did.
And then you modified it a little bit, and it worked?
Yeah. No, I'm still getting probably between 5 and 8 more miles to the gallon, but I have some ideas of changing a few other things that might improve it. But my thing is time. You know, I can only donate my efforts to so many. There's only 24 hours in the day.
Absolutely. These devices, if they happen to be alien tracking devices, Roger, that they're putting in people, why are they following people?
Well, I think your major premise is wrong. I don't think they're tracking devices. Let's look at it logically. If you were a civilization that was able to come here from a long distance, obviously your technology had to be more vastly advanced than ours.
Absolutely.
So, which, to follow through with that logic, it would most probably mean that your civilization is older and going through Michio Kaku's, sort of table of advanced civilizations. They could be thousands or hundreds of thousands or million years older than us. So let's say advanced technologies. Number one, I say this like Stanton Friedman is a big joke. SETI, who's out there looking for radio waves, to me is as stupid as, let's say, taking a tin can and throwing it into space with a string on it. You know, why would an advanced civilization use a radio wave for anything? By the same token, I don't think that if you're that advanced, you would need a device to track somebody or track something, because We know now that all of our DNA has an electronic signature. So all you have to do is build a device, and you can track anything, anybody, any
part. All right, so I assume we're ruling that out then, right?
Yes, it can't be a tracking device.
So now I got to think, what else would it be? What would they use it for? A mind manipulation thing? Something?
Well, again, if you have some bug-eyed creature come look you in your eye and put thoughts in your head, I don't think they need it.
They don't need that either.
Mind control either.
Well, we got to figure out what.
So let's look at it like human logic. I mean, if we want to know about a lesser animal such as a bear or a whale or some creature such as that, we tag them.
We tag them.
And we get the information back.
Well, I never knew I had Martians in my garden. And I never knew there were aliens on my roof. I got shadow people, and they're living in my basement. Got a funny feeling. Bigfoot's gonna be here soon. I was so blind before, I was so unaware. But now I swear I'm seeing Sasquatch over there. And I turned on my radio in the middle of the night. And I heard things I need to know. Now I can see the light. And I also see a ghost. Well, you never knew that your baby was a hybrid. But as he grew, you began to see the clues. Now you know the signs, cause you learned it from George Norrie. Even while you sleep, you got Martians watching you. I turned on my radio in the middle of the night. And I heard things I need to know. And I can see the light.